You're listening to the Talk Story Radio Network.
Welcome to another edition of Swoop's World right here on the new Talk Story Radio Network. Swoop's World, where you get all you need to know about arts, culture, news, and happiness. Our number, if you want to give us a call tonight, is 562-912-3444. You can always email us at swoopsworld@gmail.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Once again, if you want to give us a call, that number is 562-912-3444. Now just sit back and enjoy another edition of Swoop's World on the new Talk Story Radio Network. Welcome to another edition of Swoop's World Primetime, Thursday, January 24th, 2013. How's it going, Peter?
It's going all right.
Pretty good show last night. We had Kim Cameron is our guest.
Cameron, yep.
And she's always nice to talk to and enjoy talking to her. And, you know, it's always cool. Then we had a lot of fun the rest of the night,
That's
too.
That's right. Good beer, man. I like that.
Sismontane. Yeah,
you got to work on
we
that,
We had
man.
The black... Dawn, yeah.
Yeah, man, that was good stuff.
Yeah, it's a, like we said yesterday, that's a one-bottle beer, though.
You wouldn't want to drink, you know, and I like stouts, but, you know, was such a heavy stout that you wouldn't want to drink more than, you know.
No.
That was a bomber, so, yeah, that's what I would, you know, drink at the most and then move on to something else if I'm, you know, drinking more than one beer. That's for sure not...
kind of exactly what we did.
Yep.
Oh, we got our mascot in the studio with us, Ginger. Yep. Turn around here, that's cool. But something else I was going to tell you, man. Oh, I can't remember what it was. Well, we had the whole sports thing with T-Bone, of course, and covered a lot of ground last night.
Yeah.
And Rob Saul from Rob and Trav called in.
That's right.
And we determined that...
Rob and Trav Show.
It's Rob and Trav Show, exactly. Good times. But here, it's prime time, and we usually talk, and we talk bikes, man, and bike, you know, bike-related stories. And I heard a broadcast probably about... 3 or 4 weeks ago now. Interesting statistic the guy was putting out. He was saying that nationwide last year, traffic accidents and fatalities, things like that, went down.
Oh, yeah?
But accidents involving bicyclists and pedestrians went up.
Right.
And, you know, they were saying, you know, the reason they thought it went down is better roads, better awareness, this, that, and the other. But they were curious about why it went up. And I personally think because more people are opting to ride bikes and walk and stuff like that.
You got to be careful about those types of statistics because if you're just looking at sheer numbers,
right
you have more people. If you only got one car on the road, the odds of there being an accident, right? Now, if you have five cars out on the road, well, and one of those cars getting an accident, well, that's a... 100% increase, right?
Exactly.
I think it's kind of like that. You got to be careful. I think when you measure those types of statistics, and I've seen people who've kind of like taken those statistics and like broken it down, like as a percentage of people riding, I don't know the numbers right now, but I remember once looking at it, as a percentage of people riding, what they find is that while, yes, there are more accidents, simply because there's more people, as a percentage of those, of like the increase of riders, as a percentage... It tends to, and again, I haven't looked at the most recent stats. This is from a couple years ago. The number goes up, but as a percentage of people riding bikes that get in an accident, that tends to remain
about the same.
It goes up a little, down a little, and that's something to keep in mind. I mean, if you're just looking at these hard, like just the number, okay, we had 20 accidents, now we had 100 accidents. You also have to look at the fact that there's now four times as many riders.
See, that was my thing. With all the advocacy towards bike riding and you know, walking and getting out of your cars, things like that. My theory is pretty much the same as yours. Those sheer numbers went up, which probably increased the number of accidents.
Right.
But like you said, that might not increase the percentage of accidents and stuff. And so it was, but it was an interesting. It was, you know, he just threw it out there. He didn't really pontificate either way on it. And he just said, I wonder what the, you know, I wonder what caused that or whatever. But my immediate thought was there's just more people out there doing it, just because, you know, what we've seen over the last few years of the big push for get more people out on bikes and stuff like that. So,
and some of that too might be, you know, there was a time when the people who were riding bikes were people like me. They were kind of hardcore riders, you know, like, and we knew the rules. We knew we're more experienced.
Yeah.
That also may be a contributing factor, is that you do have more people riding. These people may not be as experienced. You might have youngsters who, as we talked about, don't understand the rules of the road. And that may have also contributed. Like, part of it is just more people with less skill, less experience. You know, if you have a new driver on the car, he, as we know, the insurance company tells us, is more likely to be in an accident, so you pay more in insurance.
You pay more, exactly.
I suspect that's a similar thing with bicycling, too. So there's a lot of factors, and, you gotta worry about somebody just says there's just more.
Right.
And you gotta understand why there's more. And there might be it's a legitimate concern, for sure. But
that's my question. Anytime I hear statistics, because, you know, you could pretty much bend statistics to be whatever you want it to be, you know, using the right, you know, aggregation
criteria
and stuff like that. So, but you know, it was interesting nonetheless. Now, another story that I heard this week, which I found really interesting, and I forget the name of the company that first did it, but, you know, bikes were traditionally for adults.
Mm-hmm.
And then around the 40s or so, when cars became very prominent and adults were no longer buying bikes, I think they said the government encouraged the bike companies, or one of the bike companies came up with it themselves, I can't remember exactly, but decided in order to save our industry, we need to market towards kids. And that's when the big boost came back up for bikes, and people started buying them for their kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that. And when you hear about that, totally makes sense. When you hear about people who are starting to cycle, I mean, almost all of them say at some point, I used to love to ride my bike as a kid.
Yeah.
So, you know, you'd be hard pressed, especially here in LA, Southern California, you'd be hard pressed to find someone who grew up here who at some point did not ride a bike at some point. You know, I mean, everybody. At that, there's just a certain age.
And because of that, that's kind of shocked me, because I kind of thought there always had to be kids' bikes, right?
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, it's kind of everybody I knew. When you were a kid, you had a bike.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that, no, it wasn't the fact. The fact was...
It makes sense now that you, like, think about it. I mean, and if you look at the ads that, you know, basically predate, especially World War II, you know, they... And I check out a lot of bike stuff on the computer, right? So I'm always coming across these bike ads that the ones, especially like I said, before World War II and then even earlier, always show, you know, a well-dressed man, a well-dressed
tweed
woman,
suits and stuff,
riding a bike, and you never see a kid. They never show a kid riding a bike.
Yeah.
You know, so that's it. I never really thought about it until now, but that makes sense. That probably was the case.
Yeah.
It's just funny, because it really is now. You just... Well, it's changing, but there was a period there where that's just, you know, kids, bike, like,
hand in hand,
you know, kids, bike, and a dog. It's like those three things you always see, you know, on those, you know, the perfect childhood sort of thing.
Exactly.
That's what it was.
Every Christmas.
Some kind of ball in his
who's
hand.
Who's got a new bike, man?
Yeah.
Very cool. So, did you get a chance? I stumbled upon this, it's probably been out for forever, but... this LADOT bike blog.
Right.
And it's a pretty cool blog. It's got a lot of information in it.
Yeah.
And
you just sent it to me, so I haven't looked through it. But
a lot of what's happening in LA. But it's definitely one to check out if you haven't had a chance to check it out. It's called, you know, LADOT bikeblog.wordpress.com. And, you know, they've got, you know, everything about what they're doing in LA, what they're trying to do, new sheros, new bike lanes. You know, all the bike projects they got, you know, resources, photographs, bike parking stuff and everything, bike parking designs and guidelines, which I was kind of glanced at that. And I mean, there's a lot. They're talking about long-term parking and short-term parking. It's kind of kind of interesting. I don't think about that. I think of a bike rack as a bike rack. You know,
yeah.
Some are bigger than others. You know, but it's a lot of thought going into it and. Looks pretty interesting. I'm going to have more time to take a look at it over the weekend.
Yeah, it looks like a good one.
Yeah.
At least it looks like it has a lot of good information.
Yeah.
So, and I'm just looking at some of the dates on here. It looks like everything's got the same date. Or not, I guess not. So it looks like they're updating on a regular basis, but I don't see anything old yet.
Yeah.
Anyhow, cool stuff. Definitely cool stuff. And we've talked about LA being, it's big.
It's huge. 420.
So, yeah.
Seven or something like that square miles.
So the sprawl involved and covering all of that is a monumental task. But if you break it down into neighborhoods, there are definitely certain neighborhoods, certain parts that are more, you know, conducive to commuting or riding by, you know, getting around by bike.
Right.
Especially when you talk about the dense areas where people, you know, need to shop or need to, you know, if you're commuting, I don't know, from Santa Monica to downtown LA, that's a huge undertaking, right?
Right.
But if you're in Santa Monica and you know, that's dense, all the, you know, what you need is all in pretty much that area, that much like Long Beach, you know. If you're trying to get from downtown Long Beach to downtown LA, theoretically, the river takes you right there.
Theoretically.
But it just doesn't work. But if you're in Long Beach and you need to get around Long Beach, it's so perfect for that. And so, if you look at it as, you'd almost need to look at it as, you know, kind of an individual per city or per municipality, whatever, and encourage them, and then hopefully that they develop their parts that eventually link into other parts.
Right. I think it's like the infrastructure that any city has just for its own roads and stuff like that. And then, you know, you travel from one city to the next city, you know, to take any street. Like, take Del Amo. I mean, you know, you go, you know, Del Amo runs through Carson, Compton, Long Beach, Lakewood, Cerritos.
Yeah.
You know, I'm assuming that each city takes care of their portion of that road.
Yeah.
And which allows people to travel city to city and get to where they want to get to. And I think that's the kind of effort that's going to have to take place when it comes to bike routes.
Yeah. And of course, the hard part in that is that the county is so big and has so many municipalities. Not everybody sees the value of the cycling. And so then, that's where you end up with the gaps. It's like the LA River. I mean, that's the greatest example. I mean, as I've said many times.
No, the river's maintained by one entity, though, right? I know cities patrol
areas,
and they enforce, you know, criminal activity.
Yeah, flood control, so I believe that's all county sanitation. But there's some crossover there, because, like, I know they maintain the path, but access and right-of-way belongs to the cities.
Yeah.
So,
which explains that sometimes they'll be open and close when they're closed.
Exactly. So that's a big part of it. And then there's some places where the path doesn't continue, where you have to exit the path and get back on. And that really makes that, you know, and those exitings and getting back on aren't always in the, you know, you're crossing a road now. And
not necessarily, you're not necessarily exiting onto a bike path.
You're
exiting onto, like you said, a busy
Yeah,
and thoroughfare.
So, which again goes to these municipalities need to get on board with this, and for some of them they don't see the value of it because their population isn't riding the bike, they don't have the money, they got other problems. You know, it's not a given that everybody's going to want this, and you know, and so especially some of the more industrial type of places where nobody really lives there,
right? If people come into work, drive in,
yeah, you know, you think about like
Vernon
and City of Industry and
Commerce,
you know, those places, like, why should they, you know, there's no purpose. Nobody wants to ride their bike to those
places. And unfortunately,
you got to
get off at some of those places.
Exactly.
And get across railroad tracks,
and semis, you know, doing what they need to do because that's
exactly
where the warehousing is. That's
uh-huh.
where the rail yards are, you know. So, you know, it's when you hear about them talking about, you like the idea that somebody's got this overall plan, but it seems to me, and it's good to have it, you know, you should have it, but it definitely, you need to get the cities on board with the idea. And the cities that get on board with it the fastest are the cities who have high density.
Right.
Retail, commercial, and living. You know, because that's, you know, homes. Because that, there people go, I am so pissed off that I got to loop around the block five times just to find a parking spot. Or parking is, you know, you're talking some of these places, you got to pay $15 just to park for an hour.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes more. And you're like, that's where people go, if there was a bike route here or a safe place to park my bike, or, you know, and those are the cities that usually are the first ones to get on board with. And, of course, not all those cities fit that criteria.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you're saying. Some of them just, they don't have that. They don't, and so they're allotting that money and that, even just the research of it is just a waste of their time.
Right. And I think there's a, you know, like we've spoken on some of the bike ways and bike paths that we've ridden, that, you know, the research, it's very important because sometimes, I've been on bike paths that lead to nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been on bike paths that really, for me, it's like, this is not a way I would really want to take to get to where I'm trying to go.
Yeah.
And it's good. It seems to me there should have been a better plan, a better way, a better street to do this on. So I think that, we're talking a crossover. Some of the bike routes I ride have been around since I was a kid, pretty much. And that was just basically, we'll just make this a bike path. Which now it looks like they're trying to do more that make a lot more sense. You know, this gets you to downtown, this gets you to the beach, this gets you to the shopping area.
Right.
Whereas, this is just for people who ride their bikes and don't drive a car.
Right. Yeah. You know? And it's like anything, any sort of transit infrastructure, you know. If it stops, I mean, that's always been the gripe with the metro system. They don't always stop where you want to go. I mean, you know, if you're a tourist, you want to take the metro
to get somewhere
that you want to go to, you know, so you need to link it to places like Disneyland, mm-hmm. and you need to link it to places like the airport.
Yeah, you know? That's things like that. Why don't you break that up, because that's one of my pet peeves all along. They went through all this trouble to build these railways systems, and you think they would have put one that took you right into the airport, and it takes you really to two cities over, and then you got to get a shuttle or some kind to get.
Yeah.
It's totally inconvenient.
Totally. And with the trouble of getting in and out of LAX, you know, it's like, it really, that seems like a no-brainer. And almost every major city, you know, in like Europe and stuff like that, if they have a metro system, it takes you to that airport. I mean, like literally right to the airport. I mean, I'm not saying everyone, but so many of them. And, you know, it just... doesn't make any sense.
Why I don't mind flying into San Francisco.
Yeah.
I've never ran into a car in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I mean, I've driven there a few times, but I've never ran into a car there because every time I've flown in there, just walk over to the other side of the airport, jump on BART, and
takes you where you need to go.
Where
you
need to go.
And it, I don't know. So things like that don't make any sense. And so, but it's the same thing with the bikes. You know, you gotta, if you want people to commute by bike, and so they get out of their cars and. You have to build the routes, along routes. You have to build the paths or paint the paths along routes that are safe. And you need to, go somewhere that the people want to, you know, where they're going to work, where they're going to go, or, you know. I forget where I was. I was driving somewhere, and I was like, there's this bike path, and it's like, looks like the most deadly bike path in the world. And I forget where it was. I was going over to Torrance. But I wasn't. So I guess I was like, I guess I was in Carson there. And so there's they got a bike path that runs along the, you know, parallels the freeway.
Yeah.
But the entrance to the freeway, you saw this bike path. You're like, this was just a waste. You would not want to encourage someone to ride their bike on this road through this section. It would be deadly.
Yeah.
And so sometimes they just, they're like, we've got bike paths. And, you know, they throw some paint down. You know, and it doesn't always get thought out.
Prime example of that is there's a show that I watch called Pedal America, because of PBS. He's in some part of Florida, go figure. And he's on a bike path on a very busy road.
Yeah.
Very busy road. But it's a dedicated bike path. And they're riding along, and it literally stops. And, I mean, the asphalt stops, and it's just grass. And so you have to now... There's nowhere to go. You have to get into the busy road and ride for the next couple miles to get to somewhere safe. But
it makes no sense. Yeah.
It just stopped. Did they run out of money there? Or did they just say that's the next town over? I don't know what the heck. It just stops. It's ridiculous. You might as well just put a brick wall there. Just don't turn around.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, sometimes it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, and there are practical considerations, and sometimes it's something's just too expensive to be done, and whatever. But, it's great. It's good to see that people are going that way, but it needs to have purpose and practical, you know.
Yeah. On the flip side, though, it's good to see that things are moving that direction.
It is. It's very cool.
I mean, I can sit here and bitch about certain things sometimes, but you know, I'm happy to get what we get. You know.
Well, and we live in Long Beach, so you know, their moniker is the most bike friendly city in the world, right? I don't know that they've quite attained that, but it's admirable, laudable that we've definitely seen the improvement, and we've seen the bike paths, the bike places to lock, and just the general encouragement. And as studies have shown, that the more cyclists are on the road, the more drivers get used to seeing them, the interaction. Generally, things get better.
I give them props also for the education aspect of it. All the buses, have a big poster on there that says, you know, bike ride and share the road and stuff like that. And you know, even the banners, you know, you and I say we don't really notice much. They have the banners that say, you know, share the road type of thing. And it's, you know, it's an education process. Now, it's still some fool tried to run me off the road the other day, but on a Sharrow.
Yeah.
But, you know, the awareness is there, and they're doing a lot in the awareness category. And,
yeah.
And you got to give them props for that. Definitely got to give them props for that. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk about some other things, and talk about another chapter of the Where to Bike Orange County book.
There you go.
You listen to Swoop Sorrell on the Talk Story Radio Network, and it's Swoop and Peter here on Primetime, talking a little bit about bikes. Going to take a quick break and listen to one from last night's guest, Kim Cameron. This is called We Will Never Fall Down. Back after this.
Till all those lives collide, even the trees cry. Can't you show me mercy tonight?
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad. When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
For a little ride.
Now you can share the topics that drive the discussions of your favorite talk shows with TalkStream Live's topic-driven talk radio.
We gotta talk. Let's take a drive.
List and promote real-time talk radio topics or post the topics that you want to hear. Hot topics are tweeted and retweeted and include simple click-to-listen audio links. The future of talk radio is topic-driven talk radio.
Now that's what I call real drive.
Available now at TalkStreamLive.com.
You're listening to the Talk Story Radio Network.
Hey, this is Sean Fool on the wall, and you're listening to Troops World.
Yeah, welcome back to Swoops Real Primetime on a Thursday. We're still in the morning time, man.
So we are.
We're not in the afternoon yet.
You're on the left coast.
Exactly. So, you know, we were talking, I mentioned during the break, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this, because I had really no idea previously, until about a year or so ago when we were talking about it, that, you know, there are so many different seat posts out there available, and they make a big difference. And, you know, the reason I'm actually thinking about seat posts now is I think I told you on my Surly with the fine saddle that you gave me. Every time I ride it, when I get back, the seat has adjusted on the post because of the angle of that post. And I don't care how tight I tied it, this post has a weird curve in it.
Yeah.
And the seat is readjusted. Now, I don't have any problem with any of my other bikes with the seat posts are designed differently. But that being said, there are a lot of different types of seat posts out there. Huh?
There are, and they're not the sexiest part of the bike, that's for sure. You know, but they're necessary. And the thing about seat posts is, on the low end, they just literally just piece of steel slides in the down tube and holds the saddle up so that you can sit your ass on it. And if you're not riding a lot, then probably any seat post will work. But as you get into things and you start to realize, okay, I like to ride like this, or I have this style, or I'm into this, and you will find that seat posts are only a problem when they don't work the way you need them. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, if you don't notice them, then you're probably okay. But if you're, and usually the problem comes, well, there's two types of thoughts here. Like, the problem comes when the seat post doesn't work properly,
right,
or just doesn't fit properly. And that sounds like your situation here. And in that case, you know, getting a seat post that gives you a greater range for your saddle so that you're comfortable is important. The other end of it is performance. For those people who are, you know, want the lightest, best racing type of stuff, there's a whole, you could spend hundreds of dollars just on a seat post. And in those cases, you know, they start getting into high-tech materials like carbon fiber and stuff like that. The thing about a seat post, a good seat post needs to do the things we were just talking about. A good seat post will also have be made in such a way that it absorbs some of the road shock.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get if you have like the really cheap low end seat post, you'll find that when you make the change, like you have nothing to compare it to, but when you make the change, you go, wow, the bike feels smoother. The bike is, you feel less road noise, they call
now,
it.
Now, is that because of the material or the way it's made?
A combination of the two. Yeah, the material combined with the structure inside. Like, the basic seat tubes are just literally a, steel post. And that just basically passes the vibration right up to your ass.
Right. and you feel it.
Yeah. Now, the higher end stuff, they allow it to flex a little.
Mm-hmm.
They allow it to, and it's not so much of a flex that you feel like you're moving, but that it flexes, and so it also absorbs. Because of the structure inside, it's not just a straight tube. It kind of, the vibration, it forces it to radiate sideways instead of up. which again reduces road noise. In the case of like carbon fiber, it doesn't transmit road noise as quickly as well. So it kind of absorbs it shocks almost, it absorbs the shock of it at all. So it just depends on those types of things. And then the top part of the post, how it's connected to the rest of the post, whether it's like a separate piece or whether it's an integrated piece, can also affect. Again, some of these higher end ones flex a little bit, which again absorbs some of that shock, and sometimes that's where the special material will be. You know, if you spend for a decent post, you expect to spend $80-$100, maybe a little less. Definitely, you could spend a lot more.
Yeah.
And you know, it's again an issue of comfort. Unless you're a racer and you just want the lightest seat post possible, but for most of us, as we've talked about, like that's not why we ride. You know, we're not racing, so those few ounces are negligible.
Right.
You know, and I wonder even at the racing level, does it really make that much difference? So, you know, don't go for the high tech materials. Anything carbon fiber is going to cost you twice or three times as much. But a good steel post with, you know, some sort of, you know, design to reduce road noise. I had a Surly as well, and had that same post, and I just hated it. And when it finally just broke, like the screw stripped, I was like, thank goodness. I mean, it's like on my list of things to do, but now I
have
a
to
legitimate
do it,
right? reason to get rid
well,
of
you're
it.
You're halfway out of the ride.
Yeah. So I was like, fine, I'm just getting rid of this, you know. And so I got my, and I think I got Thompson's a good company. Ritchie's another good company that produces good stuff that's not just like crazy expensive. They do have, both those companies do have the high-end expensive stuff, but most of their stuff is like, you know, good, solid, middle of the road, and that's what I replaced it with, and it felt an immediate difference.
Are the post sizes universal?
They're pretty standard. If you're riding a steel frame bike, now if you're riding any other kind of frame, aluminum, the titanium. Well, some people have those, but more the carbon fiber. They will oftentimes be different. They also have unique shapes, so meaning you need to use a very specific brand or model. The best thing to do is to take the post off and take it in, and you know, show your bike guy, and you'll be able to measure and say, okay, this is a 38 millimeter, blah 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 blah, because you know, obviously, if it's the wrong size, it's a waste of time.
It's a waste of time.
It can't be locked down. Too big, it won't even go in the hole. So yeah, that's, and usually the post that you're removing will have etched into it its diameter.
Uh-huh.
So if you're going to order off the internet or something like that, you could say okay, but sometimes the cheapest posts don't. So you know, because they're cheap. So that's something to consider.
It's a cost-cutting measure.
It is, yeah. So, you know, posts, like I said, not the coolest, sexiest part, but you will notice a difference right away.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. And if, again, we talk about upgrading your bike to be more comfortable, and like last week we talked about handlebars, possibility of changing handlebars. Seat posts are one of those things. If you're just, you know, if your ass is always sore and you've tried different saddles, or you have a saddle that's comfortable but you're still getting a lot of road vibration, a lot of bouncing, jarring, a post could be a solution for you. That's, you know, $100 is certainly cheaper than $1,000 for a new bike.
Yeah.
And that's a way to upgrade that's reasonable. Also, low tech. I mean, you can do that yourself. You don't even need to, you know, it's literally unscrew the bolt at the collar, put it in,
tighten it back up.
I mean, the more complicated part is getting your seat just right, because now they've, but that, even that's gotten so much easier. Back in the day, I mean, you had to kind of hold it, now it's so easy to be, it's very easy.
Yeah.
Anybody can pretty much make that change.
It's funny you talk about the vibration and stuff. One of my bikes that I ride, it's probably a seat post issue. I know that when I hit a bump or something like that, or you know, go up a driveway, just a little lip to the up on the driveway, times can be very jarring.
Yeah,
but I find myself unconsciously just raising up off the seat.
Yeah,
you just, you know, you've adapt. I've ridden that bike so long, I don't even think about it. And then a few times I, you know, not be paying attention, hit a bump out of the blue.
Yeah,
I know right away. But usually, I just, if I think about it, I just realize, hey, I just stood up just a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes that, just putting that little, shifting the weight up, you know, sometimes you don't even necessarily leave the seat.
Right.
You just, you know, absorb.
A little release.
Yeah. And that's something you should be doing anyhow, just because when you see the bump, when you know it's coming, because that will, first of all, it's easier on your body.
Yeah.
Especially a sensitive part of your body. It's also easier on the bike. You know, if you're jarring against, if it's jarring against the ground, that's already, an impact.
Right.
If it jars against the ground and then you jar against it, you know, you're riding your bike hard, you know, is the way they say that. And like some instances, like mountain biking, there's no way around that. You're going to, you know, but even then you want to think of, you know, like when you see people riding a horse, you know, the movies and they're, or the jockeys, you know, and they're in the stirrups and their ass is actually not quite
off. Yeah.
That's kind of what you want to think of is, you don't want to be off like they are, cause that's an extreme position. But that idea that you're kind of letting the horse, right, in that instance, move under you and you're still, which is, the best guys look like that. The best guys look like they're perfectly, they're not bouncing up or down.
No.
It's the horse because they're absorbing that. That's kind of what you want to do in the bike. That'll make you more comfortable, and it'll also put less wear and tear on your bike. So, something to think about, you know, when you're riding your bike. Got a lot already to think about. but it's especially true, you especially be more comfortable when you're over bumpy patches,
right,
cobblestones, really rough roads, and then, of course, mountain bikers. You know, if you really want to be an effective, like, downhill guy, you're going to need to figure out how to do that. So, same with your hands too. Your hands, you shouldn't be lock wrist or lock elbowed, because that jar, then just, first of all, you could hurt yourself.
Yeah.
But the jar could also jar up into your shoulders, and that hurts, and that's uncomfortable. You know, riding relaxed with your elbows, you know, let the bike kind of move a little under you, absorb. Think of your elbows as kind of like the shock absorbers in your car. You know. And if you know you're going to jar hard, try to get most of your weight on your feet. Get your ass out of the saddle, and your feet are the best place to receive that jar. Don't hold the handlebar so loosely that you lose control of it, because that's its own problem.
That can be a pain.
But it's definitely something to think about when you're riding, especially bumpy stuff. You know.
Well, you know, it's time now to, as most of you know, Peter wrote a book called Where to Bike Orange County, and each week he kind of gives us a little a route that he enjoyed. We were talking yesterday because our beer was from Santa Margarita.
Yeah.
And you mentioned some of the riding down there. But yeah. any routes?
Well, Santa Margarita is a fun place to ride. There's not a lot of fun things to do there.
But if you're out for a ride.
But if you just want to ride, I'm trying to remember, I believe it's Ride 44 is right through Santa Margarita. That's not it. 44, 45, somewhere in there. Uh-oh, I've lost it.
I threw you. I should have.
That's okay. But it in that area, it's Ride 30, that's what it is, I think. In that area, there's not a lot to see and do necessarily, but there are some great, great rides. So the Rancho Santa Margarita Loop is Ride 30. So anybody wants to check out the book or maybe take a peek at it on the app, which is free. This ride was like 18 miles almost and 1,000 feet of elevation. And the best part of it was it actually connected to Live Oak Canyon, which is a regional park that's really, really pretty. So it actually starts just above the park, and then you can ride into the park from there as a side trip, you know, which is also a ride in and of itself in the book. But that's a really great area. The great thing about that area is that it's so new that they have those super wide streets, super wide bike lanes, lots and lots of dedicated bike paths throughout the city.
Was it getting a lot of use when you were out there?
I rode on a weekday, and I was the only guy. Yeah. I didn't see anybody. I went through there on a weekend when I did the Live Oak Trail, and there was a lot more people riding then. So I'm guessing that, you know,
it's a recreational ride then. It's not a commuter type ride, is it?
That ride, because of the nature of it, could be either. Uh-huh. You know, it could be like a training type of ride. It's all on roads. That one is, the Ride 30. But the roads are just, like I said, wide and kind of run along hill crests, and then go down through a valley, and then you come up. So, great training type of ride. The area is, like I said, it's newer. So, as they built these houses, some houses, you can literally ride on this hill crest. And one side's all developed and houses, and the whole other side is just empty.
Right.
You know, you're like, so
phase three.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool because you can see how they've laid out roads and bike paths that, you know, they're going to exist in the future. And so it makes for a nice way to ride because although you're on the road with cars, there's so much space. You kind of feel like you're not on the road with the cars. So, you know, and then the Live Oak Canyon Park is really cool, really pretty, and that's a fun like detour or have a picnic type of thing. So it could be either. It could be kind of a, you know, and all of that area has a lot of routes. Now, and if you're mountain bikers, you know, you can use these roadways to get to these cool parks to do a lot of mountain biking.
Cool. The main roadway that you talked about with the car, you know, the wide streets and stuff like that. And that leads you to any like cool mom and pop places, or at all big box?
They're all mostly big box type stores. I didn't, you know, you have to kind of search. It's mostly, you know, cookie cutter.
Yeah.
You know, in that regard.
Well, that's kind of the whole general area that Santa Margarita.
Yeah. The next town over is
Aliso Viejo or something like that.
Cota de Casa,
yeah.
Which I didn't ride through at all because it really didn't have
any. It's beautiful out there.
It's
actually
really pretty stuff. Yeah. You know, so it's pretty. The parks there are pretty. The homes there are pretty. There's just, they're bedroom communities. Right. They haven't developed, you know, any, I don't want to say personality, but like unique.
But personality.
But that's kind of it. Yeah. So, you know, that being said, if you're a cyclist in that area or you want to just explore a place that's dedicated, that's the thing is. Sometimes I put in these rides that didn't have all these cool places, but the city had done so much work to make sure it was bike friendly that I felt
eventually
it'll be a cool little space, and it is a great, you know, fun. This ride was more of the, you know, workout side of it.
Because of the hills,
because of the climbing. And so I think it was rated a 4 out of 5, and 5 being the most difficult. So, you know, it, when you get enough climbs and hills, and though out there the climbs are not necessarily super steep, but they're like the long, slow.
Yeah.
And you know, they're like, oh my god, this is the longest hill of my life.
Have I crested yet?
Yeah. You know? And you're like, oh, just around the corner, and you get to the corner, oh my god, it's still going. So those types of, you know, so that definitely that one is more of the it's a fun ride. But you need to be ready for that.
You said about 1,000 feet of
over 1,000 feet of climbing, which, you know, is not crazy, but that's significant. You know,
you have close to an equal amount of descent.
Yes.
Oh,
that's it. Yeah. So it's
made it worthwhile. Eventually.
It is. Yeah. Yes. But you know, you need to be. You got to be ready for that climb. Because as I recall, as you start, it's kind of like gentle rolling, and you get this nice, wonderful, long descent, and now it's all on the set until you get back up to the gentle rolling. So, like, that 1,000 feet is almost consecutive.
It's like, no.
Zero, you've hit the low point, and now you are constant climb.
Those are my are we there yet rides.
Yes, right? Yeah. And then the last couple miles, like I said, is kind of rolling up and down, which is actually nice at that point because, you know, you get a little climb and then boom, you're down, and then if you don't hit the stoplights, you've got so much, you know, momentum behind you, okay. But it's those long, so it's more definitely, you know, commuter and recreational, but recreational for people with kind of looking for training, you know, type of stuff.
You know, with climbs, man, I don't love climbs, but what I do is I can enjoy or tolerate climbs that plateau, even if it's for a block, before carrying on. That whole just nonstop uphill for 20 minutes, I'm not all about that.
That part of the county is just, it's, you know, it's inland and south. Finding a flat route, the only place you can find a flat route is coastal. You have to be right along the beach there, the San Clemente. Even there, you know, it's inevitable that you're going to have some of it. It's just, it's the hilliest part of Orange County. So you're going to just have to make your peace with it or drive some other part of the flat part. There's lots of flat parts, but I might have to
wait till I get to that one. See, what I found for me is about 5 minutes worth of climbing. And if I can get a minute worth of plateau, I can do another 5 minutes worth of climbing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can't do 10 straight minutes worth of climbing.
Yeah.
Just say it. You listen to the Swoops World Talk Story Radio Network. We're going to take a quick break and come back and wrap things up. And let's see. What are we going to listen to here? You know, our buddy Mark Platt sent a new one out. This is called Real Thing. Back up to this.
Like the real thing, real like the songs I sing, so heartbreaking, painstaking. You are the real thing. Waited so for you, my dream has finally come true. Now it's all I can do. I know you feel it too. You are the real thing, the real thing, the real thing means everything.
Of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor, Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
Want to help those affected by Hurricane Sandy? To donate, visit sandy.adcouncil.org. That's sandy.adcouncil.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
And now we have an 8-year-old on the line. Welcome to Our World Today. What's your question?
Our continents make up 29% of the Earth's surface, meaning that 71% is comprised of water. Man automatically adapts to environmental conditions. So why do I need to take swimming lessons?
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. Brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
The views and opinions expressed by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Talk Story Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hi, I'm Mark Platt. You're listening to Swoop's World on the Talk Story Radio Network.
We've been living on the edge of life, doing our best to try and survive, and the people in charge.
And thank you there, Mark Platt. He's a good friend of the show. He's been on a couple times, and you get a chance to check him out. Mark Platt and Mark Platt and the Platitudes. And you can probably Google that and find or go to swoopsworld.com and look up Mark Platt, and got links to all his stuff.
Mr. Platitude,
exactly. he's got some good stuff out there, so you want to check that out. So definitely support those who support us. We got about 8 minutes left. Looks like the weekend's not going to look very conducive to some good riding. The rain.
We didn't ride this morning. Normally we ride our bikes to school. Didn't do that. And unless it dries up here, it looks like it stopped raining, but unless it dries up, we won't be picking up my bike either. And then the whole next, I'm hearing until Monday, is some heavy rain.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's not good.
That sucks.
That's not good. But you know what? Because I was gonna ride to Raleigh this weekend.
Yeah. And I didn't get any in last week because my daughter was sick, so we didn't do any family rides. So I was like, oh, that's all right. We'll do one this weekend. This nice warm weather would be great. That isn't gonna happen.
And I was just saying, we a couple of weeks ago it was like freezing.
Yeah.
And then the most recent week and a half is like summertime, and now we got this rain coming. This is messed up.
It needs rain during the week, not on the weekend.
Exactly. Exactly. 100% true. I'm with you on that one, man. Before we go off, I just wanted to talk to you about one other thing, a piece of equipment. We talked about the seat post. Now you got a recently acquired a bike rack for your car.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different ones out there. I don't know how many you actually looked at before you made your decision or whatnot, but at least you can talk about the one you do have.
Yeah. I mean, from my research, there's two basic ones. Fuel and the other one. I don't remember the name now.
Yeah, I can picture, but
those are the two biggest manufacturers. So there's different kinds, and let's see if I got it here. Thule and Yakima.
Yeah.
Those are the two biggest ones, and the great thing about those things is that they just give you. I love to ride from my house to somewhere. I mean, that's the best kind of riding. I even prefer that over to like a big long loop. I like to ride to somewhere. To eat, to shop, anything. I like having a purpose for the ride. It makes the ride more enjoyable. That being said, sometimes it's just fun to ride somewhere where you're not entirely familiar, somewhere new.
Right.
Explore by bike. Having the car, having been able to do that with the car is great. And so we got the Thule.
Now you have the hitch.
Yeah, version. So we have the hitch. We have a van. And so the Thule bike rack. I don't remember which one it is now, but where it fits into the hitch, and then it can carry four bikes.
Yeah.
And since there's four of us, that works out.
Imagine that.
Yeah. And it allows us to, you know, like we went on vacation around Christmas time in San Diego, and we were in, like, densely packed Mission Beach, and we parked the van, and the van didn't move for the whole 5 days we were there.
Nice.
We literally... Yeah, it was amazing. I got back in the car, and like normally, man, I got to fuel up to get home. Well, I fueled up on the way down, and
we
hadn't gone anywhere. So we literally got there and back with half a tank of gas still left in the car. I was like, that was cool. And we went shopping. We went just general bike riding. You know, oh, we got to run to the store, could hop on the bike. You know, it was cool. So that allows you to do that. The version we got is not cheap. It wasn't crazy expensive either, but the rack was like in the near 300 range,
yeah.
278 or something like that. So the nice thing about it is it didn't require a whole bunch of, like some of these other systems or even the fuel system. Like, you know, if you're going to put it on top of the car, you got to put it on there, and then you got to get the right attachments.
Right.
And so this was just kind of like one-stop shopping. I mean, you got it, everything came with it. And so once it was installed, you know, that's the nice, I liked that about it. I can't say that I've had a lot of experience with other kinds, but you have one that fits on the back of your car, but it's not permanently attached,
Well, my brother has one, but and I'm going to borrow it. I've been looking at those, and it's not permanently attached, and my question is, you know, it's, you know, you travel, you go somewhere, you jump on your bike to ride, but there are times when you're like having a bite to eat, so their bikes are, now yours is basically locked to your car,
right?
And
the
your
rack
bike,
itself,
and your bikes are locked to it.
Yes.
Now the over the trunk method, it looks like pretty much all you do is cut a strap or two, and you can walk off with the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the downside to those,
yeah.
But they don't require installation. As I
no.
recall, they're quite cheap. You know, like I've seen them for
like
$100.
$100. You can find them online for less than that.
Yeah.
You know,
I know my dad uses those, and he, you know, he's pretty much single, so he, you know, I think he can carry two bikes, but. And allows him to, you know, without having to take wheels off and everything,
right.
Just to get to somewhere he wants to ride. And I know he makes good use of that. And but it's not for long-term,
yeah.
You know, storage. It's not like park the bike in the car and then walk away for and hope
yeah,
to have
a little shopping for.
Yeah, it's not that kind of. You know, so that's, you got to know, you know, budget, but then also.
Yeah.
What type of ride? Are you just trying to get somewhere so you can then do a ride? Or
exactly.
Is it going to be sitting there for a while, you know, like at work or something
yeah.
like that? That would be a concern.
I think it's the perfect setup for me,
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like you said, I'm kind of much like your dad. It's like I'm going to probably throw the bike on there to drive someplace a ways away to ride an area that I'm not familiar with, and I'm not going to be leaving the bike there for any, you know, any period of time, period.
Right,
know?
Yeah.
You know, I would probably be more comfortable with one that's kind of locked to the car like that in case I wanted to say, you know, drive, you know, done the riding and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, hey, I passed a restaurant on the way up here and, you know, drive halfway back, get out of the car and sit there and eat without an eye on the car. But, you know, you could do just about anything. You know, there's times, like my bike was in the back seat of a convertible this weekend while I grabbed the bike to eat in a restaurant, but I could see it from
yeah,
where I was sitting,
yeah.
So. Not that big a deal.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of the things you kind of take in consideration.
For sure.
But, so you're pretty pleased with it. Now, the thing
yeah,
is when, you t- when you're, t- you know, and, you know, I know it's kind of a repeat between us because we talked about it, but when you have the four bikes, I mean, you've extended your tailgate there recently, what, about
yeah.
6 feet or so?
Yeah, like almost like half a car length.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're, and it's already, it's a van, so it's already long to begin with. So, yeah. Thing to definitely something to keep in mind, but in a lot, and we've used it a few times now, and with the exception of that, it doesn't really affect how the car handles.
Yeah.
Bikes arrive safe, and wasn't really worried about, you know, anything, and there were no problems, like getting, you know, as you drove, you didn't have to worry. And it was so nice. It's really as useful, and like I said, we've used it that trip. And then a couple other times we've gone, hey, let's go. In fact, this past weekend, if my daughter hadn't been sick, we were going to take it down and ride one of the rides in the book,
uh-huh.
The Back Bay ride, 10-mile loop around Newport's Back Bay.
Oh, wow.
Gorgeous, gorgeous ride. Yeah, I don't remember which number that is, but in the book. But it's really pretty, and it just starts off at Castaway Park and literally just goes all the way around. And for most of it, you're on a – all of it's got a bike path. most of it's like a, you know, class one path, an off-road bike path for most of the ride. And nice. It's just gorgeous, you know, if you've not been there. It's really pretty.
How close are you to the water?
Oh, I mean, you could literally ride your bike into the water. You're that close.
Is Back Bay where the like that RV park and everything?
Yeah, that's the front part of the Back Bay.
Okay,
but yeah, that where that if you've driven along PCH there, you can see that RV park.
Yeah,
yeah, so that it's it literally goes all the way almost to, for those of you familiar with the area, like the 73
mm-hmm.
cuts through, right? That's almost the back side.
Okay,
near the Back Bay.
Near, if I'm thinking on the right spot, I know where the RV park is, but if I'm thinking about the right spot north, near the 73, there's kind of a walking path
mm-hmm.
Where you could see Birdwatch and stuff like that.
That's the
I've
path.
Been there.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
That's
it. Oh,
and
cool.
That will go, and they've actually called it the back. It's the Back Bay bike path,
uh-huh.
and they've got signs up that indicate that that's what it is. And
I've
been there. Sometimes painted on the ground, but it goes all the way around. So
really,
you can,
I didn't know
and
it went that far.
It's like 10 miles,
yeah.
Or so. I recommend if you're going to do it, you know, the weekends can be crazy. Like if in the weekends in the summer, there's so many people strolling and. That it's not the ideal bike ride,
right.
But if you are there like off season, it's a great bike ride. And during the week, it's great because you know everybody's at work, so it's you got it to yourself. But it's a combination of on road bike paths and off road bike paths that go around, and it's got some beautiful, you know, vantage points where you like up on a bluff overlooking like all of the harbor,
good.
And you can see Balboa Island out in the distance,
nice.
And it's really really pretty. Pretty ride, and then for those you know who are bird watchers or animal lovers, there's all sorts of things to see. And then there's a nature center on the far side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Pop in there, and kids can learn about the ecology and environment and all that stuff.
That's
too.
Always fun. It's always
yeah,
fun.
It's a good little ride.
Very cool. I have to take a ride out there myself.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Swoops World, and we'll be back Wednesday night with Swoops World Late Night. And then, of course, next week, Thursday morning, at Swoops World Primetime. You can find us on, you can find all of our shows downloadable for free from iTunes as well as from SwoopsWorld.com. And you can listen to us anytime on your Swoops World apps available for iPhone and Android devices. And Wednesday night show is also broadcast on 1670 AM.
Dewberry
Jam Community Radio, mm-hmm. San Antonio, Texas. We want to thank everybody for tuning in. And until next week. Get on your bike and ride.
That's right. Ride a bike.
The views and opinions expressed by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Talk Story Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.